It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host...
Joe Shearer? Hello and welcome, yes, to the season finale of Fill Me Up Radio.
It's been a good season.
Yeah, it's been a great run. We'll use that term loosely, the season finale. You have to use Fill Me Up Radio loosely, too, I suppose, right? Anyway, I am Joe Shearer.
And I am Christopher Lloyd, and you are listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point. Unfortunately, Matt is once again on assignment. Still in Helen Mirren's bushes.
This is a very long and drawn out assignment.
Yeah.
I think we did it last year too, but we're happy to fill in and try to fill in those shoes.
Yeah.
But
fail miserably.
How do we know this isn't a rerun of a previous broadcast?
It actually is. We've done this a couple of times. This is actually the 1992 edition from the exact same podcast. So you will be seeing hearing a review today of the Arnold Schwarzenegger film Total Recall, not the Colin Farrell film Total Recall.
It's so awesome that, in fact, that Matt was doing the show 15 years before it actually went on the air.
That is thinking ahead.
We should mention our good friend here is with us, Ed Johnsonant.
Hi.
Thanks for coming.
You're welcome. It's nice to be here.
So, what can we say? It's our ultimate show of the summer. Last week was the penultimate. The next to last, this is the ultimate.
Mm-hmm. What happens next week?
Matt comes back.
And then when he does his next assignment, you guys are back.
Well, you know, us or someone else, you know, he spreads it around usually, but we're kind of the summer fill-ins.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And the actual answer to that question is... there is no answer. That's life's eternal mystery. What happens next?
Wow.
We're the Jack Torrances of film sociology, and if you can get that reference, then you're pretty awesome. And if not, just let us know, and we'll tell you what it was.
Says this observer.
Yeah, we'll send you to the video store.
Yep.
Yeah, you need to see that one.
So what's going on? It's August. It's been kind of a slow time since Batman came out, and it's kind of still a really slow time. I think...
What are we waiting on now?
The campaign, maybe?
The campaign next week. Hopefully. I would say the Bourne Legacy next week is kind of the last official hurrah of summer. Mm-hmm. After the week after that, you got the Expendables 2...
Expendabler.
Then you've got the Joseph Gordon-Levitt bike messenger thriller Premium Rush the week after that. Mm-hmm. I wish that was making that up, but that's actually
Hit
a real
run.
Thing. Yeah. And then I forget what's coming August 31st, but we're kind of at the end. We're kind of this summer is really just sort of stumbling to a close. But we've got at least one bigish movie this week, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Biggish, yeah.
Well, biggish. speaking of that, that's the remake of Total Recall, starring Colin Farrell. I looked it up. $125 million budget. Ed and I were discussing it after the screening last night of how much I was saying that looked expensive, and it was.
Wow, I know. I assumed it was all CGI, and I don't know. You know, I can't gauge how much CGI cost.
Yeah, it is tough, but there wasn't there. This is one of those like raft of 80s, 90s movie remakes that a lot of them have been delayed. I'm trying to remember, was this remake of Total Recall delayed? Was it supposed to have come out earlier, or this was always planned for August of 12?
It was always planned for summer, and then the first date I heard was this.
Okay. So hopefully they actually meant to do what they did. anyway, without further ado, why don't we take a little bit of a listen to Total Recall 12.
You have another nightmare?
Yeah. Are you actually happy with how your life's turned out?
Why the hell shouldn't I be?
What do you know about this recall place?
Stay away from them. Don't mess with your mind, man.
Welcome to Recall. First time?
Tell us your fantasy. We'll give you the memory. You want to be a crime fighter, or a world-class athlete, or a secret agent? Yeah. Happy trails, man.
What is it? What's wrong?
Yank that needle out before it takes.
Why are you here?
Oh, why?
No, please!
Oh, wait, wait, wait. It's all a mistake. Nobody.
Hands on your head now!
Are you trying to kill me?
Your memory was erased. Your mind was implanted with a life you think you've lived. Oh, by the way, you haven't even begun to see me trying to kill you.
Get in. I'm looking for you everywhere.
Total Recall, in case you didn't know, in case you don't remember, you can now recall. My thoughts on this movie, first of all, let me disclaim something. Last night at the screening, we just saw this last night, so it's still fresh in our minds. I sat down about 25, 30 minutes into the movie, and I just got really tired. Now, I don't want to say it's because of the quality of the movie or lack thereof, but I've been up late a few nights, and I had a little incident. I kind of dozed off and woke myself up with a snore. I was just sitting there watching the movie. Next thing I remember is, and then my eyes popped open, and my friend sitting next to me was just staring at me. Chris, you said you didn't even notice, and Chris was sitting on the other side of me at the screen. Didn't notice. I was worried it was extremely loud. I'm glad to know at least that you didn't hear it. My friend Dax did hear it, and he gave me this look that we reserve for car accidents and, I don't know, bumping your head on something in front of a large group of people.
So given the obvious, huge disclaimer that you fell asleep during this movie, what did you think of it?
It was a short window of time. I do remember just before and just after. It was the same scene, so I didn't really miss much of anything. I'm being a big fan of the original movie. It's actually one of my little brother's favorite movies of all time. So I saw it as a kid many, many, many times as a, preteen, teen. Big fan of that movie. This is definitely a watered down version of that. They eliminate some of the more charming aspects of the original. And at the same time, they keep a couple of them.
There were charming aspects in the original Total Recall.
Yes, and his name is Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And get ready for a big surprise.
Yeah, exactly. And that woman kind of does make an appearance in a way. The one to me was the prostitute with the three hoo-has that was kind of just there for no good reason.
Yeah, I was. Well, where in the film are we going to have her?
Yeah. They're like, well, she's got to be in there somewhere. And, in the original film, there was context. On Mars, there were a lot of mutants, and so that was one of the things. Here, she just has them, and she pulls them out and shows them to Colin Farrell, and he shrugs and turns around and walks off, and that's the end. There are no other mutants. You don't see her again. So it was, it was still not without its entertaining moments. I liked there was sort of this bit of almost synergy between this film and Blade Runner, and even Minority Report, which of course all three are based on Philip K. Dick stories, the cities kind of had that similar look. And there's kind of elements of both of those in the kind of the visual look of this movie.
It looks great.
Yeah, it really does. Great. Yeah, yeah. The city really does. They add this really cool contraption. They call
The Fall.
The Fall, which is basically, as Chris said in his review on thefilmyapp.com, a giant elevator that goes through the earth from Australia to the United Republic of Britain or something.
Yeah,
like
the only
that.
Two inhabitable places left on Earth.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Inhabitable, I mean habitable.
Habitable, yeah. Everywhere else is inhabitable.
Yes.
Due to pollution or nuclear war or something. I don't remember if we even bother with the specifics of what that was.
And this is from the guy that made Underworld, so most everything is blue and gray.
Yes. Yeah. And Kate Beckinsale does a lot of karate moves and
a lot.
Is featured heavily. Of course, she's not married to him. She's married.
Yes.
She's married to Lynn Wiseman, I think. Was
the director.
Yeah. So there is that. She actually does a pretty good job as the villainess of the movie, I think.
Yeah, I got tired. I Kate Beckinsale fatigue kicked in by the last part of the film where you know, you see her rising up with an angry look on her face. And it was like, oh, good God, here she comes again.
Yeah.
You know, you try soaking, you try scrubbing, you just can't get her out.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
And then the flip side of her particular coin would be Jessica Biel, who to me was a whole lot of nothing. She was just kind of there to be there, and she wandered around, and
she didn't put an individual stamp on what she was doing.
No, it was... There were the cat fights. They were, you know, they had that. They got a nice healthy heaping of that, but not much in the way of substance to her character. So I don't know. I'm going to sort of give it a recommendation, I guess.
Sort of.
sort of. It's okay if you were really interested in seeing this. Why not? You know. And Chris. Go ahead, Ed.
I liked it. I'm real fond of the original Total Recall, and I just knowing that the movie doesn't go to Mars and that it was Colin Farrell and not Arnold, I didn't even go in with any thoughts of the original, and I liked what they did. It ran out of gas for me before the end.
Mm-hmm.
I wish it was a little more personality, but this was a big futuristic kick-ass action movie.
Yeah,
and I was fine with that.
Yeah, yeah,
had a good time.
Yeah, I'm with Ed. I thought it was, I think I wrote, I said it was if possible a movie that's even less contemplative than the Schwarzenegger movie. It's just a straightforward chase movie, a very big, very flashy and slick, expensive looking chase movie, and if you go in it looking for ruminations about, you know, memory and loss and, you know, metaphysics, you're going to be disappointed. But as just a straightforward, engaging action adventure science fiction film, I thought it was quite entertaining. With it, hit a couple of vortexes at a couple of points where things were slowed down a bit. I do want to mention Kate Beckinsale as kind of the main antagonist in this movie, as the wife. You know, in the previous movie, I can't remember how far in it is, but. Schwarzenegger kills Sharon Stone pretty early on.
Yeah, it's within the first 45 minutes or so.
Yeah, here she's there all the way through, and it's her chasing him all the time, and she is really good in it. I thought it was one of the best female villains I've seen on screen in a while.
Yeah, I would agree. I do think the movie suffered from a lack of Michael Ironside and Ronnie Cox, with all due respect to Bryan Cranston, who was fine, you know.
Yeah, but again, the spark wasn't there. It was a straightforward action film. Now, this is going to sound like a spoiler when you hear this, but if you've seen the commercials where it says, and the posters where it says, is it real or is it recall? Mm-hmm. It's real. Mm-hmm. And I'm not giving away anything, because they make it crystal clear early in the film, to the point that we watch in the early scene of the apartment, we watch Kate Beckinsale make a phone call to her bosses while he is out of the building.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, which is, that's not how fantasies implanted in your head work.
Yeah. And even at recall, when they're about to inject him, or they were just starting the process and they stop. And, you know, they make it clear to him just before, you can't in your fantasy do something that you're really doing. So if you're having an affair in your fantasy, in your recall fantasy, you can't be having an affair in real life, or else it'll mess your brain up. And as they're starting, you know, he says, oh, I want to be a secret agent. And they stop and look at him and they go, with their, you know, they have their little scanner doodad and they're like, you are a secret agent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that kicks off. And at that point, you know, 15 cops burst into the room and they're,
well,
and,
now that,
the movie's
that
on.
Part, though, I mean, it could have been part of the recall fantasy in the way that when you're at King's Island or someplace and you're waiting in line yeah. and they have the little video shows, every ride goes horribly, horribly wrong just before you get on.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it could have conceivably been that. Mm. But when Kate Beckinsale makes a phone call to the overlords,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
when you're not in the building,
yeah.
there's no way you can argue, you know. So, I mean, if you're going for mind tripping, don't.
Yeah. yeah.
Just go for a straightforward action film. You know, Colin Farrell, who's real buff.
Yeah,
he's fine. You know, just go watch the original Total Recall for because that's a one of a kind movie.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
And then this one works as a good action movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So what we think of this? It sounds like Ed and I kind of liked it, but mm-hmm. Joe,
I'm on the fence. I would say leaning positive on the fence. So let's go with Ed and Chris's.
Y'all love it, so
y'all there you are. you can go with my recommendation.
All right. Moving on, next up we've got a Ruby Sparks, and we should mention that we are joined with yet another panelist joining us today.
Late breaking.
Yay. Sorry I'm late. This is Richard Probst mm-hmm. from theindependentcritic.com. Yeah.
And I believe the next movie is Ruby Sparks, which I believe both Joe and I have not seen.
I have not seen it.
And I think both of you gentlemen have seen.
That's right. You saw it. Okay. Yeah. What'd you think?
Yeah. Well, here's your, if you want the movie to give you food for thought, here's the movie. You know, Ruby Sparks looks like a romantic comedy, but it's actually about control. Mm-hmm. And how, well, I mean, the basic question is, if you got all the control over another individual, what's the ethical thing to do? What's the thing, right thing to do for the heart? What's, you know, it's all of that. What's his name? I'm blanking on the
Paul Dano.
Paul Dano. He's a writer who had a huge Catcher in the Rye style hit when he was 19. It's 10 years later. He hasn't written anything else. He's in a terrible mood all the time. And his therapist suggests, Elliot Gould, suggests as a writing exercise that he write a page, just a page, about what's on his mind. And while in the park, he encounters a beautiful, sprightly young lass. And he writes, you know, a page about that and more and more. By the way, great therapist. It takes him only 10 years to suggest write a page. 10 years. But anyway, the thing is, he writes all this stuff speculating about what she'd be like on his old-fashioned typewriter because, actually, you know, he's 29, so he remembers old-fashioned typewriters.
Yeah.
And the next morning, Ruby is in his place. And is real and exhibits all the characteristics that he wrote about. So and he tests it later with his brother by writing new attributes, and she immediately follows them. So the big question becomes, you know, he says hands off until she starts developing in her own way. And then he's frustrated because she's not minding, basically. And so what do you do? If you have the power to control, do you exercise it? Or do you let a person be a person?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know.
Well, that's the thing. He stops writing for a while. He stops developing her character,
mm-hmm.
and so she becomes her own character.
Yes.
All right. I think we do have a clip of Ruby Sparks. Why don't we take a listen to that real quick?
Why do you think you're not writing?
I don't know. I get a good idea, and then, bam, I start thinking that is the stupidest thing ever.
Tell me about it.
Ruby Sparks, 26 years old, raised in Dayton, Ohio.
Why Dayton?
Sounds romantic. Ruby got kicked out of high school for sleeping with her art teacher, or maybe her Spanish teacher. I haven't decided yet.
I'm glad you found something that inspires you.
Inspires me? It's like I'm falling in love with her.
That's wonderful.
I can't fall in love with the girl I write.
Why not?
Because she's not real.
I missed you in bed last night. Did you get some good writing done? Alvin? Are you mad at me?
Remember how Dad used to say I had an overactive imagination?
That's good.
Kelvin, but there's no possible way that Ruby's in your house because she's not a real person.
Can you see her?
Kelvin!
She's real.
Ruby!
What is going on with you?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Kiss me, stupid.
There's got to be some logical explanation.
People don't appear out of thin air.
She did.
How?
I don't know how. It's love. It's magic.
Have you tried writing more?
Write something about her and see if it comes true. If it does, this is a miracle.
Papa, Ali, bon appétit.
That was insane. You manifested a woman with your mind.
You can make her do anything you want.
For men everywhere, tell me you're not going to let that go to waste.
This is the true and impossible story of my very great love, Ruby Sparks. You may see this and think it's magic.
Hi, Ruby. Hi.
But falling in love is an act of magic.
You don't know jack about women.
I know Ruby. I wrote her.
Just don't tell me how it ends, okay?
I won't. I promise.
So guys, you talked a little bit about Paul Dano while we were off. You want to talk a little bit more about his performance in this?
I really liked his performance in this. I mean, he's one of those actors who, for me, he's got that monotone thing going on, and even worse, he's got the monotone face going on.
Yes.
You know, you don't really feel a lot of emotions coming from him.
Right.
But that really fits his character here. I mean, he's fallen into that rut. I think he goes places here. I mean, he was pretty acclaimed for his performance in There Will Be Blood. Mm-hmm. I honestly liked him better in this.
Wow.
Even though, obviously, I didn't like the film as much as There Will Be Blood, mm-hmm. I really liked him in this. You know, he goes different places, especially as the film kind of enters its final third. You know, he really becomes kind of an emotional, I wouldn't call it a basket case, but he goes all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was impressed. He had more range than I expected him to have. I was really concerned because I was very pumped about seeing this film, and I was very concerned about him in the lead. He sold me. I really liked it.
There's the advertising is pushing that this is from the makers of Little Miss Sunshine. Mm-hmm. There's a segment where he visits his mother and stepfather that feels Little Miss Sunshine-ish. The rest of the movie is not even close. It's not that type of movie. So don't go expecting another Little Miss Sunshine, mm-hmm. you know, although, like I said, it has a few moments like that. Yeah. He's good. He's especially when the movie turns cruel,
mm-hmm.
and it's hard to watch during that part.
It really is. I mean, mm-hmm. it's amazing how dark it gets, and yet it gets uncomfortably dark.
Yes.
I mean, it's such an abrupt shift that, but I think they handled it well.
Yeah, and they got their way. They worked their way out of it mm-hmm. to a suitable ending for this type of movie. All right, too.
Yeah, I really did. And I didn't think he was so much to the other extreme. I still bought them as a couple.
Yeah, and Ruby is Zoe Kazan, Elia Kazan's granddaughter, and the co-writer of the. Was she writer or co-writer?
She wrote the screenplay.
Yeah.
And I should mention, I read this. They're also a real couple in life and have been for years. And in fact, she wrote this screenplay specifically for the two of them to star in.
You know, the one part that surprised me was at the very end when you thought you knew where the relationship was going to go, mm-hmm. and then you found out that he was in recall the whole time. And hadn't even met him.
Kate Beckinsale attacks him.
Yeah. Yes. Now, I will say when I read about the premise for this movie, you know, it's that, you know, so you're a guy who creates a woman who, you know, anything you put down on paper becomes incorporated into her personality.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how they, you know, I saw just in the preview, you know, one thing they do is that they make her speak French and have kind of a French background. And I assume that's not the most daring thing he does, because if it is, then he is the lamest excuse for a heterosexual male ever.
Well, that's when he's just testing with his brother to make sure that, because at first he thinks he's hallucinating.
Yeah.
He gets his brother over and he meets her. So it's like, oh, she's actually physically here. So that's when they test the controls. You know, what can we make her do that she wouldn't be doing normally?
Okay.
I
hope things don't get too. But yeah, I was thinking about this. I think Ed and I, you and I, even discussing this movie a few weeks ago. And I was trying to think about, you know, what would an actual, you know, normal straight guy probably do in that situation, you know, like, you know, be sitting there. Let's see, Ruby Sparks, she is a nudist who likes to give long back rubs, and she spontaneously produces ribeye steaks from her epidermis.
Well, you know, the interesting thing, though, is that it doesn't go as much that direction as you might think. And instead, it goes back to the whole idea of control. I mean, mm-hmm. that's when he really starts testing everything with Ruby, is when he starts to lose control of her, which I thought was kind of a brave choice to make for the film.
Yeah, and you know, the character, like I said, he's really got indie film mopey-itis, you know? I mean, one of the worst cases ever. So, you know, when he writes her initially, you know, based on somebody he meets briefly in a park, when he writes about her initially, he's writing in broad strokes, mm-hmm. you know, and really idealizing things. And this is a guy who's just not really had contact with people nor really wanted it that much. You know, so it doesn't get into that area. You know, it goes off into, it's more about his socialization and his, mm-hmm. you know, his idealized idea of a woman. You know, and he's not like most straight guys.
He's not. And I think really it depends on how you approach the film. I think different people from different backgrounds are going to take it differently.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which I enjoy that kind of film. I mean, it lets you go different places with it. So. Definitely.
Okay. Big recommendation for it.
Okay.
Now that was a good movie.
There you go. All right. And we do have one more new film coming out this week, which is Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Dog Days, which I believe this is the third movie in the series.
Diary 3.
I've not seen any.
I think it's 3.
Is it 3?
I think so.
That's right.
I believe it is.
Oh, that's right.
I remember Roderick Rules was the second one. Yeah.
I'm even saddened that I know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, and so Roderick is the brother. Now, I did see this one. Is he like an adopted brother, or was he always the brother and just it's Roderick Rules in the second movie?
Yeah,
okay. No one knows because no one's seen them. However,
I saw the first one.
They're based on a popular line of children's books. I do know that.
Yeah, I saw the first one too.
Kids like them.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
All right, well, let's take a brief listen to Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Dog Days.
I can't believe it's so crowded here. Maybe we should come back.
How about never? Does never sound good?
Boys, a family swim is a great way to kick off the summer.
Let's not forget, opening day is free.
The party's here, it's just begun.
So that was impressive.
The night is young.
Pretty high.
Are you talking to yourself?
No.
You're talking to yourself because you're scared.
I'm not scared.
Then go.
Whoa, whoa, whoa!
Hi, Dad.
Hey, Holly.
20th Century Fox presents Greg.
I'm gonna take a little vacation. I'm gonna...
Rowley.
I feel like a gangster right now.
Frankly.
What's that supposed to be?
It's a human head. And look, he's smiling.
Sherlock.
I have been ensnared by my own handiwork.
Holly.
Why don't we play doubles?
Patty and me versus you two.
Patty.
Yeah!
Yes!
I mean, sorry.
Manny.
No!
Want to see my hand?
Sweetie. And Roderick.
When did you get a tattoo?
There's a lot of things you don't know about me, Gregory.
This summer.
In case we don't make it, something I have to tell you. One time, I went to the bathroom, and I didn't wash my hands.
One time, I used your toothbrush to get dog poop off my shoe.
What?
Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Dog Day.
Away on a little vacation.
All right. So I believe I'm the only one who saw this one.
I think that's a safe assumption.
What can I say about this movie? It's television. I know it's in a movie theater, and you have to pay money to get in, but it's television. You can probably tell it's like a cable TV production mm-hmm. with
Disney
you know
Channel.
Slightly better production values. Yeah, Disney mm-hmm. Channel type of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, a Disney Channel you know movie that they spent you know $5 million on instead of $500,000 on.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Steve Zahn in it playing the dad who's you know vexed by his troubles and his young son and
does it really?
Yeah, I know. And boy, does it make you feel old to see Steve Zahn as the
wow.
As
yeah.
the,
but I would see it just for him. Yeah. I like him. Is he any good in this?
Yeah. He does what he can do, but I mean, you know, it's a Disney Channel fair, and it's typical stuff. He's supposed to be going into the eighth grade now, and it's summer, and it's all about what's he going to do with his summer, and that his big plan for his summer is he wants to do nothing but sit in front of his television and play video games, and that lasts about a first day, and then Dad gets mad at him and takes away the video games. So then the rest of the movie is finding other things to do with the summer. And he goes into Boy Scouts. Of course, they don't call it Boy Scouts. They call it Wilderness Explorers. And he's trying to get with this girl, Holly. You probably heard there in the trailer because I think she's in the other two movies. So now that they're supposed to be about 13 or 14, you know, he's obligated to want to get with her. And, you know, they go on a roller coaster and have troubles with that. And, you know, the big brother is there causing troubles. And there's a whole big long sequence where they're – one of the kids is a member of the swanky country club, and so he starts getting them into the country club.
Oh,
and,
no.
You know, he lies to the dad and tells that he's got a job at the country club just to get the dad off of his back, but it turns out they're just going there to hang out and eat Slurpees.
Ensue.
Yeah, I mean, there's really almost nothing I can say to you that would surprise you. I mean, it's like, you know, you just set up that character and situation, and, you know, any one of us could write the movie and probably hit the mark pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I love the way, like you mentioned, that he gets with the girl because they've been in the movies together. So
yes, they've been in three movies now, so yeah. He has to. They're old enough to want to, you know, have relations or desire relations with each other. And
one of the
favorite
moments ever was on NYPD Blue, where they actually acknowledged this inevitability of romance thing. There was a new character played by Henry Simmons, and he was watching them and stuff, and somebody talked about if asked him if he was going to ask out somebody there in the precinct, and he looked over and he said, I don't know if you folks just, you behave so inbred. I mean, we're in New York City. There's a very large dating pool here. He goes, no, I'm not going to date anyone I work with.
Yeah.
And it was like, there you go. So,
yeah. So I didn't hate this movie. It's kind of made for that preteen crowd, and maybe they'll be excited or pleased or satisfied to see it. I should mention, you know, of course, it's Diary of a Wimpy Kid, named on a series of books, and of course, the actor. I don't know how old he is now, but he's getting to the point where he looks like he could play some left tackle. He does not look like a little wimpy kid anymore, but. What can I say? This is this movie. It's, you know, it's like a 98-minute distraction for kids on a summer day.
Otto, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
I like that one.
All right, you ready? We'll take a little break and come back with the video story.
I really gotta go to the bathroom.
Oh, that's gonna be the cue.
That's your cue right there.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So, do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open a video store!
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Open it up. It's time to open up the video store with kind of a creak this week. There's not much. That front door's clean off some cobwebs. There's
it's
not a whole
like a
lot going on.
Video. It's empty.
Yeah, exactly right. What do we got this week? We have Detention.
No new theatrical releases coming to video. Yeah, you mentioned Detention. What's that about?
It's some kind of a horror movie. Josh Hutcherson is in it.
Who he knows because he saw it.
I know because I have it at home and I didn't get to see it.
Does it say on the cover, Josh Hutcherson, the star of the Hunger Games?
He is above the title, Josh Hutcherson. There's a picture of him. Yeah, from the Hunger Games, from the Journey movies from the past couple of years. I did interview him in person. He was in town when the first Journey to the Center of the Earth came out, the Brendan Fraser film. He was
what a
here.
Quality film that was.
Yeah, wasn't it? And but he was a nice kid. He had about 15-year-old girls standing around, and I think he was 15 at the time. So he had a bit of a smirk on his face. Had a bit of a distracted interview, if I have to say, although he seemed a nice kid. Also in that movie's Dane Cook, by the way, if that gives you any indication of where his career has gone.
That's quality.
Right where it deserved to be.
Exactly right. What else is going on? Anyway, that's kind of a horror movie. I don't know. That's if you want to see it, go look it up.
We mentioned another straight to video horror movie, ATM. We actually have a review of that up at thefilmyapp.com. Yeah. Take a look at that. It's just what it sounds like. It's a horror story about, I think, a trio of friends who get hijacked at an ATM and the dark adventures that ensue.
I take it as Devil, if you saw the film Devil from a few years back, trapped in an elevator with a monster. This is trapped in an elevator that's not an elevator. It's an ATM vestibule, which is also derivative of an episode of Friends. So take out the Playboy model, put in a killer, and there you go.
All right. We also
gives you a good idea, doesn't it?
The Hatfields and the McCoys, which was a TV movie starring Bill Paxton and Kevin Costner, that I actually heard here was quite well received. Which channel was that on? It wasn't the History Channel, was it?
Yes.
It was the History Channel?
It was the History Channel. And so, it had some Emmy nominations.
Yeah. So I heard it did quite well, so I didn't see it, but I heard good things about it.
They kept Kevin busy.
Bill Paxton.
Keep him on the range and keep him out of the water.
I think they're talking a sequel, even. No, I'm serious. I think they're talking about a second series or continuation, though.
Doesn't the movie end with most everyone dead?
Well, then you'd get the next generation, the survivors.
Costner can play the son, too, That's how they do those things.
Oh, boy. Did want to mention a Blu-ray release of French classic film La Grande Illusion. The Grande Illusion.
great translation. Yes, absolutely.
This is one of those movies that I heard about when I was in film school. That people who are very much into cinema, have opined that it is the greatest film ever made, above Citizen Kane. And
wasn't it pretty prominent in the list that came out just this week?
Yeah, I think so. That was the Sight and Sound annual poll of film critics and directors and experts, which we should mention is most notable for Vertigo. Knocking Citizen Kane off of its perch of many, many decades, which I personally love. I would watch Vertigo over Citizen Kane, 100 times to one. Mm-hmm. But, that's so subjective. It's supposed to be objective. But I did see that Tokyo Story by Ozu, which I've never seen, was, I think, number 3 on that list, but number 1 on the director's list.
Huh.
So that went into my Netflix queue. I figure, hey. Those guys like it.
They didn't have the original Die Hard in there, though.
No.
I think Die Hard with a Vengeance was in there. Yeah. It was number 11, maybe.
That's just wrong.
Die Harderist.
Everybody knows Die Hard 2 is the best of that series.
Right behind Die Hard.
Anyway,
Kid 3.
The Grand Illusion, it is a great movie. I wouldn't put it quite up there as, talk of all-time great, but it's set in a prisoner of war camp. during World War One, with Eric von Stroheim and some French actors. And it's about the relationship between the German captors and the French guys. It's a very interesting movie. I'm not sure if anybody else here has ever seen it. It's kind of an old school topic. You know, it's about the separation of men between a nobility and commoner, and where does nobility arise, and these sort of deep think questions.
Cool.
Anyway.
Is there any Styx music in it?
No, but there should be. Very good film. So go check that out.
That's the spoiler of the end, is the starship heads to the sky.
Domo arigato, Mr. von Stroheim.
Thank you very much.
All right. And unfortunately, that is actually it for the video store. We'll close it back up, and boy, that was a pretty
sad
trip. The entire month of July has been like that for video releases. I don't know what it is.
It's a good time to go back through all those ones you haven't watched.
Yeah, it really is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the video store is closed.
I want to plug something sometime during the show.
Go for it.
Now's the time.
I do a thing called the Can-Do List. It's a weekly listing of everything going on in the Indianapolis area that's either free or no more than $5. I'm very proud of it. It's a lot of information. Go to whatedsaid.com, find where it says Can Do List, and click on it, and you'll have it. You can subscribe to it for email or by email. Nothing costs you anything. And like this week, did you know tomorrow morning, starting at 9 a.m. on the east side, there are hurling championships.
Wait,
Irish
what?
Hurling. Yeah.
Not Wayne's World hurling, I hope.
No, not that kind. But, I mean, you know, that's in there. And all the stuff about when to get the free coupons for the free admission to the fair from the Star on Monday and what days they are you can get in and what free things are going on those days. It's, you know, if you're broke, this is the thing to read.
Right. And it includes, I believe, some movie screenings. Whenever people are having movie screenings in parks and such, I know you've included
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm. It's got everything free I can find.
It's
that,
awesome.
You know,
it really is.
Cool.
It's a good tool.
Speaking of movie screenings,
We wanted to mention summer movies. We've been trying to do that every week during the summer for the special showings. I do believe the Keystone Landmark is done for the
summer.
They're
wrapped up, yeah.
Their midnight movies for Friday and Saturday are done, so we can't talk about those. But we do have the IMA, the Indianapolis Museum of Art, is having their summer movie nights. And tonight is a very special movie that I really love. It's from 1994, The Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I have often commented to people that, you know, we love to talk about, you know, the year in movies and think about, you know, how was the year for movies. Like, I think, you know, like last year we thought 2011 was not a particularly good year for movies. I've often said that I think 1939 was the greatest year for movies, at least American movies ever made, because there's just so many great movies. Mm-hmm. I really think 1994 is going to be remembered in that same vein as one of the all-time great years for movies. Because you look at the films that came out that year, again, focusing on Hollywood films mostly, but, you know, The Shawshank Redemption and Forrest Gump and The Lion King and Pulp Fiction and a bunch of others that we can name. Mm-hmm. Just an amazing year for movies. And I really, really love The Shawshank Redemption, especially after I went back and read the Stephen King novella mm-hmm. and see what they did with it to frankly, I think, you know, not necessarily improve on the story as written, but to make it better adapted for a movie.
There, I read an article a couple years ago. They were talking about films that re-screen well on TV. You know, because like Turner Classic Movie or not TBS and TNT and stuff.
Yeah.
There's titles that come up over and over, and they said that they studied this. You know, they've studied it for years, and Shawshank Redemption was the most repeatable film in the television catalog. That people, no matter how often they reran it, people came in pretty much the same numbers every time and tuned in.
Yeah, and it plays constantly, and it's and
oh,
to me
yeah.
and to me it's even to this day, it's one of those movies that when it's on, the remote goes down on the couch and you watch.
Really?
Yeah, oh, absolutely, without a doubt. It's, I mean, man,
did you like it the first time you saw it?
Yes, I did. It and I didn't see it until later. I saw it on home video. Of course, I missed it as most everyone else did in the theater.
Yeah.
And I just remember the scene in the rain with Tim Robbins' arms kind of outstretched. And I was like, oh, that's kind of pretentious and stupid. I'm not going to watch that. And then I saw the movie, and, man, I fell in love with it just, I mean, instantly.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, and it was you know, Morgan Freeman's just his narration is just so perfect, and it is to me very surprisingly faithful to the novella. You know, there's minor things here and there, but
yeah.
For the most part, there's a lot of overlap, and it's the even some of the narration is almost, I think, at times word for word from the book, and it's fantastic.
I think it was a real coming out movie for Morgan Freeman. I think he had been so well known and respected in Hollywood, but I think that was the first time where people said, "This guy isn't a great supporting character actor. This guy is a great lead actor."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was so pleased when he was nominated for an Oscar in the best actor category and not the supporting actor category.
Yeah,
because as I have argued to people about this, his character in that is the main character in the movie. Andy Dufresne is, to me, a supporting part because everything is seen through Red's eyes. Everything we see about Andy Dufresne is seen through the prism of Red, and it's a great, great role. And a great, great actor in it.
Yeah.
I wonder what happened to him after that.
I heard he's got a nice career on the stage.
I heard he got a god complex.
Oh. There you go. I wanted to mention while we're talking about that, the performance of Bob Gunton as the warden, who's, you know, strictly character actor. Man, he was so great in that.
And I believe, wasn't that one of his last roles? Because he died fairly young.
Why don't we look that up and see if he's still around?
You know what kept me from seeing that for a long time was it was Tim Robbins.
Yeah.
There is something about Tim Robbins that makes me not want to watch anything he's even connected to.
Really? Why is that?
I get this. I think of Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon, and I just get this. I immediately visualize two sour, politically two activists yapping endlessly about dreary things in a dreary way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a smugness.
And that was the height of the Susan Sarandon and Tim Robbins, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are they still together?
They actually broke up terribly. Yeah.
I think he dumped her.
Within the last year or so.
Is he still self-righteous all the time?
Probably.
Yeah,
I've tried to disentangle people's off-screen personas with their movies, which can be difficult at times.
Yeah,
especially.
I know.
Certain people that seem to be going out of the, you know, like I remember Spike Lee when he got really big in the early 90s there. It was like, you know, I had to go watch, you know, like and love Malcolm X and not think about the idiot guy Spike Lee who says things on TV that are ridiculous, in my opinion.
Well, you know how annoying Tim Robbins is. Most of the stuff he said, I agreed with, and he still irritated the heck out of me.
But stand up.
I respect it because you know he did go on to direct some movies and make some movies, most notably Dead Man Walking, starring Susan Sarandon and Sean Penn. And boy, there's a trifecta of opinionated actor Hollywood people. But I thought they made, for people who obviously are so strong in their own political opinions, a pretty balanced portrait of a movie questioning the death penalty in a very, I thought, a very balanced way. So, you know, I'm with you. I see how that can sort of cloud the add some static to there.
By the way, Bob Gunton, the actor, is still around, according to the Google machine. I just punched it in.
Google is never wrong.
I must be thinking of somebody else.
He was, I think you are. He was most recently in The Lincoln Lawyer a couple years ago with Matthew McConaughey. But I remember him the best from an episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation where he played as kind of a rogue starship captain. He was fantastic. In this kind of this tweener, self-righteous kind of, I've got the moral obligation to do this and this and this, and fantastic character in that, much like he was in Shawshank Redemption. He's a little more strictly villainous.
I'm thinking
Did
of
you.
The,
I'm sorry.
I was thinking of the guy in The Grifters who had that supporting role. I can't. What is that actor's name? He died.
Michael Saracen?
Nah.
No, that was another one. Flim Flam Man.
You're thinking of. It's going to come to me as I scroll through the IMDb.
you
You're thinking
ahead.
Of the man who played Brooks, maybe? The old guy who hanged himself in Shawshank.
The Google machine. No. Was that from a sitcom last night?
It may have been.
I think it
I
was
don't watch that show, but I'm sure they said it.
Okay. the unnamed sitcom, he doesn't watch it.
Yeah, I don't watch that show. Maybe that's where I heard it, though. Wow, it's not in there. James Whitmore. Is that who you're thinking of?
No, I'm not thinking of James Whitmore, but it doesn't matter. I remember having a discussion with somebody once about James Whitmore that they thought that the Shawshank Redemption was too long and that they should have cut out all the James Whitmore stuff.
Oh, no.
And I thought that was crazy, not just because he's so good in it, but because all that sets up Red's own transition.
Yeah.
It's like laying the pathway for Red's story, and his story would not have nearly as much resonance if we hadn't seen the James Whitmore stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm.
It was a film that I did not, honestly, I didn't like it the first time I saw it.
Really?
I didn't, it didn't connect. It was kind of like Schindler's List in that way for me. I both of those films, I watched them once. They were good, but whatever. Then the second time, I was just blown away.
Yeah, yeah. That's, I had that kind of the foresight seeing it later on, and man, it grabbed a hold of me. Clancy Brown is another guy as the head of the guards. Whew. Man, he was he and he is now more or less the model for all prison guards in movies, you know, these days.
Yes.
I thought that was Tom Hanks.
No, that was The Green Mile. That was the next one. Yes. Same director.
I also like some Clancy Brown, although he is forever the Kurgan.
From the Highlander. Yeah, yeah.
All right, do we have a What is Kobe Watching segment this week?
No.
Kobe is not watching
anything.
But
we've got the obituaries. Oh, also, before we get into that, I want to mention, next week, August 9th, talking about it now, that's next Thursday, talking about it now because by this time next week when the show rolls, it will be over. The White Rabbit Cabaret, 9 o'clock, August 9th, 1119 Prospect in Fountain Square. Check out The Boy in the Basement. This is a sellout New York and Indie Fringe show. Comic book romance story that tells the hilarious and sexy tale of a would-be thief who is captured by four college roommates who share the apartment he is burglarizing.
Nice.
So check that out. White Rabbit, that is next Thursday, August 9th, 9 p.m.
And speaking of comic books, August 9th and sexy, I will be headed to Wizard World Chicago Comic Con with my son and a few other friends and family members for the weekend. If you care to join me, I'm
make
not
a trip to Chicago.
You
with you.
Can't, yeah, you can. Well, you, I mean, you can follow me, but you can't stay in my room. I can't. I'm not buying your ticket.
You're
to
not
get
gonna
in.
Pick them up and drive up there and split gas money.
Maybe if they have a van, I might. You know, I might ride in it with them. But
that's
know.
A new segment for Film Yap. All Anytime with Joe.
Yeah.
I like
does
it.
Gen Com still come
this is what
this
I thought
year?
About on my yeah. drive to Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Why don't we talk about this, that time of the show, as Matt likes to say, where we raise a glass to people in the film world who have passed on. Just a few we thought we'd mention here before kind of getting to kind of a bigger one. Actor Norman Alden. I know the name probably means nothing to almost everybody listening, but just Google the name and find a picture, and you will see the picture, and you'll be like, oh, yeah, that guy. One of the guys who was just in lots of things, Ed Wood, Back to the Future. He was the voice of Aquaman during the cartoon. And probably one of his better known roles as Horrible Hank Hopkins in the Kansas City Bombers.
Wow.
Actor John P. Finnegan. Again, a guy who had lots of small roles but did lots of things. He was on the TV show Columbo. He was in The Natural playing Roy Hobbs' manager, voice in American Tail as Warren T. Ratt. Documentary filmmaker Chris Marker, who did a bunch of things. I think he was like a painter, did a bunch of things in his life, but also made a few documentaries. La Jetée, A Grin Without a Cat, Sans Soleil, A.K. Did want to mention Jonathan Hardy, who is a New Zealand actor, was in movies like Moulin Rouge and Mad Max and Farscape. Also a screenwriter. Got nominated for an Oscar for his first screenplay, Breaker Morant.
Yeah.
Wow.
We should mention, if we could back up to Chris Marker, La Jetée is the short film that the movie 12 Monkeys is based on. It's a great film. I actually watched it in my film class, and it was fantastic. And it's almost entirely still images over narration.
Wow.
And you watch that and then watch the film 12 Monkeys with Bruce Willis and Brad Pitt. From the 90s, it's a really, really kind of a fun evening if you're a film lover.
Okay. And obviously we want to do a little tribute to Gore Vidal, who, hard guy to pin down. You know, obviously he was a writer, essayist, novelist, gadabout, appeared political pundit, but also did some screenplays and did like some doctoring of screenplays. One of the things he first got known for was doctoring the screenplay for Ben-Hur, to deliberately add some kind of homoerotic overtones to the story that, I don't know, probably, do you think they went over the head of most people who were watching it back in 50, whatever?
I remember Charlton Heston, it was pointed out to him way later, and he was going, no.
No way. No way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Take that, Chuck.
I think he didn't write a lot of screenplays himself, Gore Vidal, but he had a number of his books turned into movies.
I know where we're going here.
Okay, you tell me where we're going.
Myra Breckinridge, one of the worst films ever, ever made.
Which I have not seen, but based on his book, did he do the screenplay for that as well? I think he might have. I'm not sure. Other stuff that he worked on that he actually had his hands on, Suddenly Last Summer, The Left-Handed Gun, and then kind of in the last 15 years of his life, sort of, I think, as a lark at first, but continually more frequently, became something of an actor, was actually brought in for a lot of smaller roles. He was in Bob Roberts, had a notable role in Gattaca, a great science fiction film from the 90s, Igby Goes Down. So
that's a good movie.
Yeah, Gore Vidal.
Yeah, I really liked Gattaca.
Literally the sort of the man for all seasons, did a little bit of everything.
Now, Chris, you did an impression of Gore Vidal off air. Can you do that for us now?
No, we're here to honor the man's memory.
Well, we're going to resurrect him.
No, I just, he did kind of have that reputation, even though he was a gay man and out in a time when that was a very brave thing to do. He did sort of have an old fashioned, prep school, stentorian, aristocratic air to him.
Mm-hmm. I saw the Dick Cavett show the night that he and Norman Mailer almost got into a fist fight.
I remember. Have you seen that footage? It's great.
Oh,
they were going at each other. People, and he also went with what was that? William F. Buckley. I think they went at it a few times as well. Where I think there's one infamous one where Buckley called him the Q word. Not to defend him, but I think that was immediately following Gore Vidal calling him a Nazi. So,
Gore.
Well, we've got a few minutes left. Anything else there on the film horizon that anybody wants to talk about, or just about their personal life, or just anything else to fill the last 3 minutes?
Can I plug something?
Sure.
I would encourage you to pick up my latest book. It's called The Hallelujah Life. It is available on Amazon.com.
And I believe it's just reached some stratospheric heights there on Amazon. Is that right?
It is. It is in the top 100 books on Amazon.com.
Way to go.
In the categories of sexual abuse and disability. Mm-hmm. It is an autobiographical book, kind of intense in spots, but I think those on a healing journey will really appreciate it. So. Mm-hmm. Check it out at Amazon.com or Book Mamas here in Irvington.
Having read it, I would second that. It's fantastic. Very good book, Richard.
Thank you.
Yeah,
appreciate that.
It's very powerful stuff. So, check it out. And it's a very quick read, too. So don't feel like you're going to be bogged down for months on end. It's very brisk and affecting. So.
Yeah, and we should just mention some things still going on at the filmyap.com. We do still have our ongoing series of counting down to the next James Bond movie, Skyfall, which there's a new trailer out for that this week, which is really cool. You should check out. But we have our series by Nick Rogers that he's doing a little write-up of every single Bond film, of course, called You Only Live 20 Thrice. So if you haven't checked that out, go see it. We've all still got Austin Luger still going through his Mountains of Movie Madness, where it's essentially a dare where he just got people to send him reams and reams of movies that he'd never seen, and he has to watch them and write about them.
I contributed two movies to that list, Humanoids from the Deep and the yet-to-be-reviewed Teeth. So he's saving the worst for last, I suppose.
He's getting revenge the best, on you worst. For always dumping on
Yeah,
him.
Every week I wait for them. I'm going, Teeth, is Teeth in there? And every week I see something else. I did finally see Humanoids from the Deep, which I suggested Teeth first, so he purposely skipped it. So I can't wait to see him what his reaction is to that. So again, that doesn't constitute a recommendation by me to see Teeth, especially not before checking it out for yourself to see what the subject matter is.
The can do list again. You can find it at whatedsaid.com. Yeah. And how about this in the remaining moments? Since the DVDs were so bad, what would you guys, off the cuff, recommend people to rent instead?
Jackie Brown.
Oh, you could never go wrong with Jackie Brown.
Specifically to rent or like get from Netflix or something like that?
Yeah, anything.
Oh, I don't know. I just finished watching Kansas City Confidential, which is a film noir that Matthew often talks about. So I figured since he talks about it so much, I got to see it. So that's a good one.
Joe?
1952.
Yeah. I have been trying to watch the entire film, but I keep getting bogged down. I've been entertained so far by, I believe it's Lockout, the Guy Pearce sci-fi movie, which is very just crazy fun to me. It came out earlier this year. I'll say based on what I've seen so far, that'll be my recommendation for the moment.
Rich?
I'd say from 1994, I believe, Coen Brothers film, The Hudsucker Proxy.
Oh, speaking of Tim Robbins, yeah.
Winter's Bone popped into my head, and I'm not sure why. Uh-huh. Jennifer Lawrence.
Because it's a good movie.